Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right. Good morning. Welcome back. It is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. They appreciate it. They really do. August 4th, 2021. It is a Wednesday. Good morning. So how's it going? Thank you. I'm doing well. I appreciate it. So it is Wednesday. It's been a couple days. Trying to get back into the podcast groove. I got a lot going on, just like everybody, nothing special. Just trying to do a lot of stuff, balance it, juggle it, so to speak. Family, work, podcasting. Podcasting is the fun part of my life and my family. Family and podcasting. Family first, podcasting second. And then work. So blessed. So blessed. I have a job that I love. I love it. I try to balance out money and love for the job. Just like I try to balance out, sobriety and serenity, right? I love money. I love it. I've never had a lot of money. But I've also had periods in my life where I've had zero money. So I always say I'm a millionaire. Because compared to where I was, I am doing very well. There was a time in my life I was headed nowhere fast. I remember, in fact, I was going to talk about this on another podcast. I just can't believe that I'm sitting in a studio next to my salon doing a podcast about recovery when, however many years ago, I was sleeping on my buddy's couch. My dad was sending me a check every month to cover my portion of the rent because I couldn't pull it together. We were washing cars. We used to have a car washing business, and we would drag this trailer around to different car lots and wash all the cars on the lot. And we had a power washer, and for my age and the time, it was fun. I'm sure we all have that story where we really spent a period of our life really no direction, not doing much. Maybe not all of us, but I know it's definitely part of my story. And we would drink every night. I remember drinking Evan Williams because we couldn't afford Jack Daniels. So we'd buy Evan Williams. And it was funny back in those days. We bought anything the cheapest price for the most amount of beer. The cheapest price for the most amount of whiskey. And it was fine. We were not picky. I think that's when they started doing like the 30 packs. I don't remember, but I just know that our main goal every night was to get some beer, get some liquor, and get some weed if we could, and hang out. We would just hang out in the apartment. Friends would come over. We'd sit in a circle and basically just drink and pass it around and play music and play guitars and just hang out and have a lot of fun. And then once we all got pretty toasted, we'd head out for, whatever adventure we could possibly get into. And it was a lot of fun. It was a distraction from trying to become a mature adult. And at that time, I really didn't think twice about it. I didn't have a lot of expectations for myself. I know I was very influenced at the time by a girl. And I had, I guess I'm going to tell a little bit of my story. My dad was part of the military, and he had retired and taken a job over in Sereno Valley, San Diego. And they said, you need to come with us. Actually, they didn't say that. They said we're moving. And I was like, I'm not going. I'm staying. I'm getting an apartment, moved in with my girlfriend, and I was not leaving. And the problem was I was involved. So, of course, everything fell apart. The relationship fell apart. I was barely making enough money and ended up at the last minute leaving New Mexico and heading to California. But I would be out in San Diego in the most beautiful part of the country. Amazing, you know, if anybody's been there, it's like amazing. It's like Hawaii, but on the mainland, I should say. I almost said the United States, but anyway, it was paradise and it was great, but I was miserable because I missed my girlfriend. And so I packed up my shit and I headed east back to New Mexico with nothing. You know, I think my parents might have given me a little bit of money, but I was done. And drove back to New Mexico to be with my girlfriend, who in turn, as soon as I arrived in New Mexico, basically moved to California, moved to Los Angeles. And you got to remember, this is like 1986, 87, 88. You know, Guns N' Roses had come out. You know, we were deep in the music game. And she wanted to go to L.A. and hang out with the Hollywood boys. And that's when the Guns N' Roses, L.A. Guns, Faster Pussycat, Poison, Cinderella, all these, you know, all these bands from back in those days were all, you know, performing out in L.A. and Hollywood. And she wanted to have that be part of her lifestyle. And it was funny because all the people I grew up with, my buddy Scott, you know, Sean, all these guys, they were in bands, and the whole goal was to get to L.A. And it was funny. So I'd moved back to New Mexico, I won't say couch surfing, but I was just living on a couch in my buddy's apartment, and my girlfriend bailed. And I just kind of started the beginning for me, you know, drinking every night. Not an alcoholic, though. By choice, loved to party, loved the social part of it, loved the potential relationships that may come from it, you know. You know, he's partying and meeting girls and hanging out, and we used to hang out down in L.A. Park, and it was just a fun time. And I know a lot of people that spent those early years out of high school, whether they went right to college or, you know, waited a year but then into college and started, you know, investing into their future. I did not. Invested into nothing. I uninvested my parents because I couldn't seem to mature. I was immature for a very long time. And, you know, getting in fights and, you know, just breaking ribs and just whatever. I was just a mess. So to, you know, at that point in my life, that was kind of what that was the bar. I really had no expectations of my life. I honestly probably would have done that forever. Would have probably done that forever. But, you know, I was in a staying. Eventually got my own apartment with the guy who in turn we would end up getting in a fight. And in turn that relationship would end. And in turn I would leave that apartment, pack up my stuff and head back to California. And soon after that would become the time where I would start doing a lot of speed and drinking, and it was a different kind of partying. It was San Diego, North County style partying, just little bars. I loved little bars, the Kraken, the Leucadian, you know, whatever they were, you know, not dingy, but, you know, I like dark bars with pool tables and, you know, and just, it was fine. My problem was as I started getting into that speed. Actually, that's not, I would love to say that was my problem. There were several problems, but speed didn't help anything. And got all wrapped up in that, and I think I've shared this before, ended up getting busted, arrested, and sent to a probation camp on Big Bear Mountain. Camp West Fork. Never visit. Beautiful place, never go visit. Actually, looking back on Camp West Fork these days, I remember that it was actually, you know, other than the fact that I was away from my house and away from my girlfriend and my friends and my drug of choice, it was pretty sweet. I mean, we lived in cabins in the mountains. I actually worked in the kitchen. I mean, it was pretty... I mean, if you're going to do time, that wasn't so bad. And I wasn't doing time. I was at a probation camp. And I remember thinking that I am going to, because I was going to get assigned to work release. And that was what I wanted. I had hired a lawyer. I want work release. And in the back of my pea-sized little mind, I thought that I would be able to go out during the day and do speed and come back and do my time and no one would ever notice. Well, that wasn't the case. And I remember, you know, and if anybody's been in one of these kind of situations, you know, the clock's ticking to, you know, day one. I mean, oh, I got to turn myself in 20 days, and then all of a sudden it's 15 days, and all of a sudden it's 5 days, and all of a sudden it's the day before, and you're like, oh, my God. And this, you know, 20 days, I need to stop doing speed. 15 days, I really need to stop doing speed. 5 days, I'm going to stop doing speed. High the night before. Checked in high. And I remember them telling me, you will not be staying here. You're going to a probation camp up in the mountains. I lost my shit. I remember calling my lawyer, what? I'm basically having a tantrum. And he's like, I can't do anything about it. So I was like, fuck. And then they sent me to that camp, and I remember going to meetings, and I've shared all this, I think, in the past. But my dad said, listen, you can either go with us to Delaware or you can stay here in California. But if you do stay here in California, you're on your own. I had matured enough to realize that was a bad idea. So I said, well, I'll be going, and it'll be no problem because I am sober, and it's going to be great. And I got out. I think it was like, it must have been January, like the 15th of January that I got out, 1994. And I was like, I am not getting high. I am sober. Changing my ways. And I got out and I got high. I got high that day. My girlfriend picked me up and we got high. And nothing had changed. I'm still full of shit. And so moving to Delaware, and I think I've shared this, and then my girlfriend bailed because she hated it. I hated it, but I couldn't go. Couldn't get any speed. And basically switched all of my addiction powers straight to alcohol. And that was really when I started to hit a bottom. Drinking every day. Every morning I'd wake up. I don't want to drink anymore. Every lunchtime I'd consider it, and by the evening I was drinking again. Going through all the typical scenarios. I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to drink anymore. And then drinking again and being like, how come I did this again? It was just, it's alcoholism at its finest. Actually, it's not really. It's self-centeredness at its finest. Alcoholism to me is once I have a drink, I can't stop. That is alcoholism. But all the shit that goes along with alcoholism, I think, is humanism. You know, I think all humans deal with self-centered bullshit. And are deficient in humility. You know, it says it. You know, I went to the meeting the other day on Monday, and it was supposed to be on the seventh step. So, you know, ready. I kind of talked about, you know, the sixth step, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Defects of character. The shady shit. The naughty shit. The bad shit. The stealing. The whatever, you know, defects of character, the lying, the anger, the hatred, the sex stuff, whatever that may be, all that bad stuff, entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. So the seventh step was the next step. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, you know, those are the throwing gum in the street, you know, the little stupid shit. Like I said before, my buddy Matt used to say, this is one of those steps where we stop stealing the freaking Wawa sugar packets. And I'm like, what does that mean? The Wawa sugar packets? I've never heard of such a thing. And today, It makes absolute sense. So I went to the meeting on Monday, all prepared to talk about shortcomings, and there was a newcomer. Newcomer. And at this meeting, and at most meetings, honestly, especially a step meeting, if you have a newcomer that's been to the meeting, this is their first meeting, first time there, first meeting ever, we always refer back to the step that starts it off, which is the first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I am just, you know, what a fascinating sentence, right? What a fascinating step. What a fascinating group of words. And I remember when I first heard it. You know, but to me, there is, and this is for me, and listen, if you're new and if you're in a program and you're just getting there and you're doing it, do it. Listen, don't pay attention to this. But there's two, for me, and I've learned over, you know, however freaking many years I've been, you know, I'll celebrate 13 in December. I had four or five in the beginning, which was a really a messy four or five. A couple in the middle there. But, you know, how I thought about this step in the beginning compared to how I think about this step now are two different ways. You know, early on, it's about sobriety. Keep me off that fucking alcohol, right? Don't let me drink. You know, don't, you know, hell or high water, don't let me drink. You know, and so it's about sobriety. And sobriety, I think the definition of sobriety is to be without drink, right? Sobriety means you don't drink alcohol. And when I read this step, that's what it was saying to me. We admit it. I was great at admitting shit. I was great at admitting shit, and I was great at saying sorry. So we admitted we were powerless. Listen, that fit right into my world at the time. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, I know I drank every night, and I know I got in a lot of fights, and I know I broke a lot of shit, and I know that I wasted a lot of money. And I know I couldn't pull my head out of my own ass. I remember I couldn't pay my rent. So yes, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Yes, It makes sense. Next step, right? But when I look at the step today, and I live a life now, and it's not about sobriety. It's about serenity. Peace. Happiness. Joy. And I don't mean life is just always happy, happy, peaceful, and joyful. All I know is that if it isn't, I know how to fix it if I choose to. And so today I look at that step. It takes a group. We rely on one another in this program. It takes a group. That's why you walk in, shake hands, look people in the eye, say hello. Can I be a part of this? What can I do? Get a commitment. Get a sponsor. Admitted. We surrender. Wave the right white flag. You know, this is, I've said this before, this is probably the first humble thing that I had done. But I had to be in the serenity state of mind more than the sobriety state of mind. The serenity state of mind understands that I am a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That's my problem. I can't drink. I just can't do meth. I can't eat too much food. Sugar. I love sugar. Listen, women, you know, there's a thread that's run through my life. So, you know, that can even be dangerous. There's a lot of things that are dangerous. But we admitted the first probably humble thing I'd done, the first to me, the first dose of medication to fix my self-centered problem, right? And so to admit, we admitted, we as a group together, that means we show up together, we discuss it together. This isn't an individual by myself program. It doesn't say, I admitted. Yeah, of course you did. It says, we admitted we were powerless. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. You know, if I, sober side of me says, oh, don't drink, that fixes the whole thing. Take away the alcohol, everything's fixed. And that's not the case. That is not the case. That's a trick. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Sobriety says, yes, my life is unmanageable. I can't seem to stop getting caught. I can't seem to, you know, get enough money together to pay my rent. I keep wrecking my car. I can barely hold a job. I've limited my options because of my drinking. So, yes, that made absolute sense. But the serenity side says, we admit we are the powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. Which means I have got to take a fucking honest look. Do I even want to be sober? You know, you can't admit that, right? You can't admit that you don't want to be sober, especially by a bunch of people that are trying to get sober, because you'd be like a fraud. But that's an honest, to me, that's being honest. And I think it's fine. If you don't want to get sober, because I didn't want to get sober. I wanted to stop getting caught. My life had become unmanageable to everybody else, to my parents, to my employer, to my friends, to my family. And slowly, one by one by one, they've fallen off. I remember the week before I got sober, I probably had 3 friends, a girl that just put up with this shit. She must have had zero self-esteem, had zero love for herself and put up with a fucking bum like me. I had another friend who drank like me, and that was it. That was it. Because everybody else, my life, had become unmanageable. They couldn't manage it in their life. And I get that. You know, when people, you know, there was a person that worked for me. There's been tons of people have come in my life and I can't manage it. It makes my life unmanageable as a sober, serene person. So the serenity, you know, later on I would look at this and say, you know, I didn't really want to get sober. I was pushed into a fucking corner. Like many times before. You know, I wonder how many people go to rehab that have been pushed in a corner. I know the first time I went to rehab, there was no option. I hated it. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't want to get better. I just faked it. I wanted to get out of the corner. I wanted to get the heat off of me. And then I went to another rehab. Same shit. You know, I didn't want to get kicked out of my parents' house. I needed to get out of there. Spent 30 days in a rehab. eating graham crackers and fucking milk and these awesome dinners. And I remember, you know, getting out and basically getting high again that quick. No desire to get sober. A desire to take the heat off of me. And that's just being honest. You know, it's, and if you read how it works, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our steps. It must mention the word honesty like 4 or 5 times in the first couple paragraphs. So listening to that first step and thinking about the person, different person that I am today, you know, just being honest about it. And then so we, you know, I guess the point of that whole story was I was at this meeting and, you know, listening to people comment on the first step. And listen, listen, if you're at a meeting and you're getting sober, that's awesome. But in the back of my mind, I know that there's a point where we have to stop being here for the sobriety and start being here for the serenity. You know, I had to stop being here for the fear of drinking and start being here for the love of being sober in a program. And once that happened, my whole mind opened up. And I realized this isn't a program really about alcohol. This is a program about self-centered fucking assholes. And listen, we all are. Some are just better than others. But we all think of self first. I mean, that's what keeps us living. That's what keeps us moving forward. You know, it's changed for me in my life. And it's a, so when I look at this, you know, you look at these entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, that is sober version. Sober guy looks at that and says, all right, God's coming down. He's going to take it out while I'm asleep and I'm going to be free of it. Serenity side of me says this is requires me to pray about situations that I want to remove. And if I'm praying, that's because I built a relationship that I figured out in the third step, you know, a relationship with a higher power. A relationship with a higher power, a relationship with Bill J, a relationship with Mary W, a relationship with Frank P. They're all the same. Hey, Frank, what do you think? I'm going to think about hanging out in a bar because I just want to play pool, but I don't want to drink. Or you say, dear God, I don't think this is a good idea. I'm just putting it out there. And you hope that you start to, you know, early on you say, dear God, I'm thinking about going into a pool hall. And you go, I'm waiting for an answer. Nothing. But over time in a relationship with a higher power and you pray about it. And today I know if I'm praying, it's probably not a good idea. If I'm praying to God that I'm wondering if I should go hang out in a pool hall, I'm pretty sure I shouldn't. And even today, I wouldn't hang out in a pool hall anyway because that would be, like, absolutely stupid. Not only because there's nothing good for me in a pool hall and a bar, but I don't even like to be around drinking people. I had a lady the other day is like, how come you can go to a restaurant and have dinner, right, and sit with people that are drinking? I'm like, absolutely. You can hang out and have just drink seltzers. I'm like, listen, I'll go to dinner, and if someone wants to have a glass of wine with their dinner, I'm fine with that. If they want to have a second glass, I'm okay with that. I'm not hanging out all night drinking seltzers while they tie one on. Fuck no. I got better shit to do. I want to go home and enjoy my serenity. You know? And that's no offense to anybody. I just know now, 13 years later, that's just, it isn't even about the fear. It's about just, I'd rather just be at home. So I think my point of the story is that I've changed, I've evolved. You know, I let this program start teaching me things about being a man, about being a father. And, you know, when I was back on that couch, you know, to think that I would be this at this point in my life one day where I would own a business doing podcasting with a ton of friends. You know, my wife and I were going to, my dad has an advertising business and, you know, he's had it forever. My grandfather had it forever and we're going to take it over. And I told her, we do know a lot of people. That doesn't mean, you know, it's going to give us success, but, you know, sobriety has brought us a lot of friends, and these aren't friends that we have to hang out with at restaurants every night. These are people that you see, hey, man, what's up? You know, I saw a guy yesterday. It's funny. I go to the grocery store. I always see like 2 to 3 people that I know, you know, and I think that's just from good, clean living, serenity. And that's very important. And I think it's important that, you know, people start to understand that. And I can't tell them to. Nobody told me to. I stayed long enough and I started to kind of understand it. But, you know, it took a while. Let's do a reading real quick. Oh, shit. We're almost out of time. Almost out of time. What do we got? Oh. Damn, my battery's low. Killed my phone. All right, here we go. Let's see. Maybe. All right, daily reflection. Sorry. Not prepared. I was a little bummed out. You know, I was all excited about that. You know, because when I sat here and did that podcast, that's the first time I've actually looked up the definition of character defects and what was the other one? Humbly asking about shortcomings. I really didn't know. So if you don't know, character defects are like, you know, hate, you know, just all the real bad shit. Crime, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, all that bad shit. And shortcomings are like, you know, stealing the Wawa sugar packets, throwing your gum on the ground, leaving trash on the ground, you know, just all the little shit that honestly you get away with because nobody's looking. All right, August 4th, Seeds of Faith. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail nothing. We can have faith yet keep God out of our lives. Very true. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 34. As a child, I constantly questioned the existence of God. To a scientific thinker like me, no answer could withstand a thorough decision. Oh, a thorough dissection. Until a very patient woman finally said to me, "You must have faith." And with that simple statement, the seeds of my recovery were sown. Today I practice my recovery, cutting back the weeds of alcoholism. Slowly am letting those early seeds of faith grow and bloom. Each day of recovery of ardent gardening brings the higher power of my understanding more fully into my life. My God has always been with me through faith, but it is my responsibility to have the willingness to accept his presence. I ask God to grant me the willingness to do his will. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, slowly I am letting those early seeds of faith grow and bloom. I remember when I was reading something in, I think that it was in the Big Book, and I went to Norway with my wife and her family, and I had been drinking, and our relationship had kind of come to this weird spot. And it was up in the air if I would even be going on this trip. And I remember I was going to be better. I've got this. And I read the Big Book all the way to Norway in an airplane. And I always remember it says, faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. And that, to me, made so much sense because, you know, you can believe it's going to work. But unless I'm doing the work, unless I'm taking steps like I'm doing today, and this is for me, but if I'm starting to understand that this is more than just a drinking problem, this is a self-centered problem, this is a lack of humility problem, this is my ability to not take the higher road problem, only until I start understanding that stuff do I start to get better. Hey, have a great day. Thanks for letting me share. Bye.